Let's bring out our panelists. Please welcome our science consultant, Dr. David Salzberg. All the writers of The Big Bang Theory, including executive producers Chuck Lorre, Steve Millaro, and Bill Prady. And please welcome our special guest moderator. You know him best as Dr. Rajesh Kuthrapali. Please welcome Kunal Nair.
Hi. Surprise. How is everyone doing in San Diego? Welcome to Comic-Con. Welcome to Comic-Con. We are so excited to be here. We love our fans. Our show would be nothing without you. So thank you so much. Thank you so, so much for being here. This means the world to us. Thank you. So we're going to have a lot of fun today. I thought we'd start by me asking them some embarrassing questions, and then we'll open up some to the audience, and we'll see what happens, all right? All right, so let me take my jacket off. That's all that's coming off, relax. David Salzberg, who is our science consultant, rock star, who makes sure that everything is correct, and still gets 1,000 hateful emails a day from my friends. You were really nervous about the topic of Leonard and Sheldon's paper, correct?
That's right.
Can you tell us why?
The writers asked me to come up with a discovery for Sheldon and Leonard, and it would have to be a significant discovery. So I thought about it quite a bit, and we came up with something related to superfluid vacuum theory and the space-time in the universe. And I added a little bit, which I thought was kind of cool, about surface tension, which had not really been used before. So I thought this was really pretty good. And I submitted it. And I get the scripts, you know, each time a few more pages. And the next time I got the script, I saw that one of the people in the show who will be reading the script was Professor Stephen Hawking. At which point I had a little bit of a panic attack. My fear was that he would look at the script and say, I'm sorry, I actually can't agree to be in the show, which luckily didn't happen. On the upside, I was hoping he would think it's a brilliant idea and write a paper. I'm still waiting for that.
Funny quick story about Stephen Hawking. When Stephen Hawking came on set for the first time, he came to watch a run-through, and Simon Helberg, Wolowitz, had to do the voice in the scene in front of Stephen Hawking. And all of us are doing the scene, but we're secretly looking at Stephen Hawking from the corner of our eye to see how he would respond. And he was smiling. He was loving it.
He loved it.
Should I tell them the time? I directed the first scene with Stephen Hawking and Sheldon, and there was no weirder moment in your life when you look at Professor Hawking and say, action.
Again, Stephen Hawking has a good sense of humor.
Last season, we heard Amy's fan fiction, and I just want to know what inspired that.
We had become aware that there was quite a bit of Big Bang Theory fan fiction out there in the world, and one day in the writer's room, we looked it up and started reading it.
So, I mean, is there going to be any Kuthrapali fan fiction or anything like that? Wouldn't that be amazing?
I think that might be a better question for the woman who plays Amy.
Ah. Do you want to ask her? Hey, Mayim, you want to come out and answer that question for us? Mayim Bialik, ladies and gentlemen, surprise!
And since you were asking about fan fiction for you, the writers and I took the liberty the other day of writing some Kuthrapali Amy fan fiction. And I happen to have it here. if you wouldn't mind giving this a read.
Yeah, share the mic.
Yeah, are we standing together and doing
yeah,
this?
Yeah, we can stand together.
Can you hear like this?
Yes.
Can you hear?
Yes.
You should say your lines into the mic because it's a big, it's a big audience.
Okay.
Did we just warm up for 1 second?
Amy looked at Kuthrapali, peering at the stars through his telescope. She had always thought of him as a friend, but now something was different. She'd spent her life studying the brain, but she had a feeling tonight this Swami of love was going to teach her about another organ. He looked up from his telescope, met her longing gaze, and said,
"Have you ever read 50 Shades of Grey? I'm about to introduce you to 50 Shades of Brown."
Amy replied, "That doesn't make sense. Grey was the main character's last name." Kuthrapali pulled her close and said,
"That kind of semantic nitpicking is going to get you a spanking."
Oh my. Then I should point out that semantic is the wrong word, you sexy beast from the third world. He whispered into her ear,
"Forget about Shami. Tonight, you and I will be a sweaty, tangled mass of Kuthrapemi."
In that moment, Amy wondered what she had seen in Kuthrapali. She knew who she needed to be with, the sexiest people of all, television sitcom writers.
Oh, man. We gotta take a question from the audience. I'm sweaty.
I don't know if we want to answer your question directly right now, but I can tell you that the answer will be in the premiere episode of season 9.
It will?
Well, a partial answer.
You know, from the actor's point of view, in all honesty, we don't get the scripts until the night before. So we tape on a Tuesday night in front of a live audience, and Tuesday night we get the script that we're going to start on Wednesday. And it's really exciting, and to be completely honest, almost 9 years in, every Tuesday night still feels like Christmas. Because you open the script, and in the first few seasons, it was like, okay, how many scenes am I in, you know? And now it's really become like what's happening in the story, and that's a testament to how these characters have grown and how incredible these writers are.
Sometimes lunch is late. It's terrible.
I think one of the biggest challenges for us is any of those episodes where there are big, heavy moments, like when Sheldon told Amy, "I love you for the first time," or these kinds of things. So we care about these characters deeply, and it's very important to us that we get those kind of moments right. And I think that's when the stress levels probably raises up to the highest, when we're in the middle of those kind of scenes.
But there's also the challenge, I think, in writing comedy, which is you want characters to do bold, funny things, but you have to show that the bold, funny things are reasonable. You have to show that it's the reasonable next step in the progression. And sometimes that can be difficult. And if you don't do it right, then the characters just seem crazy.
I have a question for you guys then. When you're pitching jokes in the room, do you pitch them as the characters?
Are you asking if we do your accent?
Yeah.
Only for you.
Really?
You no, pitch? Really. Really only for you.
I know Bill does, because Bill has a good Indian accent.
Does.
So you pitch the jokes in the accent.
Of course, that's how you would know how they would sound.
Thank you, Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's good.
Kevin Smith was on the show this past season, and he was supposed to be coming to the run-through, the rehearsal for that week. And that morning, my assistant said, you know, Kevin wants to know if it's okay if he could bring his friend. And I said, who's his friend? And she says, I don't know, some guy named Jay. And I ran down the hall saying, so oh my God, Silent Bob is bringing Jay today. So it's either, you either knew what that meant and you lost your mind or you didn't care. But I know you were very excited.
I lost my mind.
I remember when Billy Bob was on, and we were all, you know, we were in the scene with him the first day of rehearsal, and we're like nervously doing the scene, and he's also nervously doing the scene, and then he stops in the middle of the scene, he looks at us and he says, I can't believe I'm here. Because his mother loves the show so much and got him hooked on the show that he was watching it, and he was doing a scene with me and Simon, and it's like, and he couldn't believe that it was real, and we couldn't believe that he was real. That was fun. That was a fun moment for us.
Billy Bob Thornton was one of the nicest people that we ever met, and he came and he worked very hard. And then after the show, and we tape on Tuesday nights, there's pizza and beer backstage, and people sort of hang out, and if people have brought friends, and they meet people and stuff like that. And Billy Bob stayed until he kind of closed the place. They're sort of, you know, turning the lights on and playing closing time. And
we also had Nathan Fillion on.
Oh yeah, he's dreamy.
I had met Nathan Fillion previously at a Golden Globes party, and it was like pretty deep into the party, and I was feeling super brave. I was like, hey Nathan Fillion, Firefly was a good show. And someday I'm gonna make $1 million and buy it and make both our dreams come true. And he was really nice, but then he came on the show, and so I kind of walked up and I was like, hello, Nathan Fillion, it's nice to meet you for the first time. And it's great, because it turns out celebrities, if you meet them, they don't remember, so it like kind of doesn't matter.
Or so they say. So we did the episode where we had to shoot an alternate, a different ending to the Skywalker Ranch episode when Jim and Johnny end up at Skywalker Ranch. And we shot the ending, and then a week later we had to shoot a different ending. Do you want to talk about that? That was an interesting story.
You want to discuss the ending that didn't air?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just reading it from the pages that you guys gave me. Sorry. If you don't see me next season, you'll know why.
The first ending that got shot, we found out at the end that Sheldon had stolen a lightsaber
from Skywalker Ranch.
And I was deeply troubled. The character couldn't commit what was essentially a felony. He'd stolen something that has real value. So we came back a week later and I don't even remember what the other ending was. But no, Sheldon was never going to become a felon. As long as I'm engaged in the show, that character can't possibly commit a crime like that. So that was, I think, how the second ending came about.
What was the second ending now? Do you remember?
His sense of smell was still burned off from being tased, and Leonard, I think, was having him sniff magic markers to see if it was coming back yet.
So I have a question. So when Sheldon stole the print of Indiana Jones from the movie theater and ran down the street, is that not a crime?
We have to go rewrite that one again, too.
Mayim, I have to ask you a personal question that's on everyone's mind. How is it to kiss Jim Parsons on The Big Bang Theory?
It feels weird to qualify it. Like, it's great. You know, I think, you know,
Details, Mime, I think is what they want.
Yeah.
A lot of details.
I think whenever...
We're not looking for a philosophical answer.
Well, you're going to get one. Whenever Sheldon and Amy have intimacy, it's usually very specific and it's very gently placed, and you know that scene that was in the reel of us opening a scene kissing, even Jim and I felt so strange about that because our kisses have never been, you know, kind of like make-out-y, you know, and even that, we both know how to kiss differently than our characters do. But, you know, I remember Mark Zandrowski, our director, you know, we tried it a lot of different ways. You know, at one point I was...
You're welcome, audience.
Oh, my.
No, at one point I had my hand on his shoulder, and then Mark wanted, like, a little bit of movement, but not, you know, very elegant movement. So I think for me and Jim, kind of everything we do that's intimate, you know, including that, is very... It's very crafted. You know, we're never cavalier about that.
Tongue or no tongue?
I'll tell
it's funny
later.
For two characters who haven't kissed, he sure spanked you a lot.
Is that on your little piece of paper?
No,
or was
no,
that
no.
Improv?
That was all in here. It's really fun being an actor on the show too, watching the other actors in scenes, because we're also such big fans of each other. And on a personal note, watching, you know, Mayim and Jim are also wonderful, wonderful close friends off stage, but watching the scenes together is electric. So even in rehearsals, we'll just sit and watch their scenes, and it's really, truly, we become fans, you know, to watch the scenes between them.
But,
it's really fun.
But Mayim, you and Jim have a very particular, I'm not making a joke, you have a very particular process that is interesting to watch. Could you talk about how you and Jim sort of work through and decide how to play a scene?
What's interesting is, you know, Jim is a classically trained actor and I'm an untrained actor, but what's kind of neat is that we have a very similar way that we go about approaching scenes and approaching our work, and we work well together, which I think, you know, is very important, especially for, you know, as Steve indicated, things that are heavy and delicate, especially for a character like Sheldon's, and then, you know, Amy as his kind of counterpart. Jim and I are very, very careful about how we do things. We talk a lot about it. You know, some actors don't talk a lot, and that's fine, and that's their process. But Jim and I do talk a lot. We wonder sometimes why the writers make decisions. We have conversations of, gosh, did you think we were ready for this? I didn't expect this. And even with I Love You, Jim and I were both very... We were very surprised that we were there, you know? Even The Ring, we have those conversations, and to me, I think that adds to the complexity of the interactions as characters, because when I have to tell him I need time off, you know, that had all of those conversations that Jim and I had behind it. Is this right? Is it not right? So I think it's really, it's part of what makes our communication as actors well, is that as people, we're interested in the same things about those characters.
You know, when we started, we never considered the characters nerds. Honest to goodness, we really didn't. We thought they were extraordinary.
These were
extraordinary characters, brilliant, brilliant. We talked about them as being brilliant minds without the paranoid schizophrenia.
One of the things that I remember very much being around people like this and being a person like this is the celebration of difference and the acknowledgement of difference and the celebration of it. And we talked about that these characters celebrate who they are.
You know, I get asked this kind of thing, you know, a lot. And I feel like much as, you know, there is this sort of notion of like geek chic and, you know, that maybe our show has had some part in showing that. I think what our show demonstrates is that all kinds of people can have full lives and relationships and friends, and we don't need to pathologize everyone. That's not what we do. But I think what our show also shows is that it still can be lonely to be different. And some of my most favorite moments are when I see the writers have Sheldon have that experience. So, you know, when people ask me, like, oh, you guys make, you know, nerds cool, it's still really hard to be different. And especially for young people, if you have interests that are not aligned with popular culture, it's still lonely. And I love when Sheldon expresses that he doesn't understand some interactions, and it's painful to him. And I think that's kind of, you know, the beauty of what our writers do. They show all sides of that.
let
Maya handle
it.
Maya's not taking this one.
Why would E.T. and Jesus fight? Wouldn't they be on the same page?
Superman is vulnerable to magic. Wouldn't godly powers be technically under magic?
We'll get back to you.
And when Thor, historically, when Thor fought Jesus, he lost. He lost. Northern Europe converted to Christianity.
Saladin's our engineer. Why are engineers bad, is her question.
Right. He hates what he doesn't understand.
I thought that's because Sheldon likes science.
Oh. It's on.
Oh, I have a question. We did something very cool. It's not even a question. I just think it'd be fun to bring up that we did something very cool with UCLA. Chuck, if you want to talk about that for a few minutes, that would be nice.
Oh, yeah. We started this scholarship for kids going into STEM educational paths at UCLA. STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. And this started a couple of years ago, actually, when we noticed that there was a trend in the United States and in England where kids were pursuing the hard sciences, and one of the reasons they were doing that was they were watching the show. And that was stunning. When this started at my kitchen table 10 years ago, we never imagined that people might make life choices based on what we were doing. And so it seemed like a natural progression maybe we can help. So I think we have a little over $4 million in a fund. This fall at UCLA, there'll be 20 Big Bang Theory scholars starting UCLA. And we get to hang out with them and stuff. And I think if we do it right, it should go on in perpetuity. So we can keep doing this.
I think that Amy had really longed for all of this. She didn't have friends, she didn't have a penny, she didn't have Bernadette, and after a lifetime of loneliness and craving that, she had access to somebody who could put her on the fast track. And with that came these desires for a boyfriend, and all those other things came along with it. And you know, like all the characters on the show, they have grown, as have Sheldon and Amy and their relationship. So
I think Sheldon really needed a reason and a specific person or event that might lead to some catalytic reaction in his existence. But yeah, I think that's exactly it. Amy absolutely was wanting a life with something more than herself, and it all came quickly, right, as it were. And it's taken much longer for Sheldon.
We honestly didn't know what we were doing at all. We really had no idea what we were doing. And I think it's fairly pretty much well known that the first try was an absolute colossal miss on our part. And we got lucky and we got a chance to do it again.
I think most of you in the room know what Chuck is referring to, that there was a first Big Bang Theory pilot that never aired. That never made it onto the network, and then they got another opportunity to do it.
In your opinion, Kunal, what was the biggest problem with the first version of the pilot?
Oh, me and Simon and Kaylee weren't in it.
I think he's right.
This is a wonderful invention by a man named Sam Cass, who is a computer programmer, and he had put it online. In the first episode where it was used, the reference to Sam was cut, and we made sure when we referenced it again that the characters said "All hail Sam Cass."
Yes.
to acknowledge this wonderful gift of a thing that we found on the internet, and Jim learned it.
Yeah, I was in that scene with Jim.
But that's
probably did not more than four takes. Probably. Yeah. I mean, the Jim's a genius. Jim really is a genius.
Jim is really good at memorizing things like that in some kind of strange supernatural superpower way.
But you see why we wouldn't have said, like, soft turtle,
for
example,
right? Is there
right?
an animal
soft
you think would have
been better?
Soft
porcupine was tossed around.
We should end with that song, huh?
Soft porcupine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You guys want to sing Soft Kitty? I don't know the words, so please take it away.
Soft kitty, warm kitty, little ball of fur. Happy kitty, sleepy kitty, purr, purr, purr.
We love you guys so much. We love you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Have a wonderful weekend. Be safe. Love you.